Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
After Museveni, Uganda without Museveni, it is the aspiration and desire of each and every political party. That's why NRM has got majority in parliament. Then the question comes, bring us a very serious fundamental question. What are the rest of the opposition doing?
Lawmakers in Uganda elect a new speaker of parliament.
It will ensure that Nigerians are one people, and it will ensure that their future, you know, is one. You know, that though they may be different, and their lives and goals and theirs, you know, may all be different, that they are essentially one, you know, people with one future.
Former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar declares plans for his presidential bid to compete in next year's general election.
Lo and behold, the plan was set up by PF. These are the characters we're dealing with. What do you expect from them? You expect them to clap for us? No. This is what their agenda has been from the way to go. Their agenda is to ensure that PF does not rise. Their agenda is to ensure that PF is killed. That is their agenda.
And Zambia's main opposition expresses concern about what it says appears to be a plan to target former government officials with corruption. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Uganda, lawmakers have elected Anita Aneth Among as the new Speaker of Parliament. Among, from the ruling National Resistance Movement, or NRM, won the contest with 401 votes, defeating the opposition candidate Asuman Basilirwa, who garnered 66 of the total vote cast. Among replaces Jacob Ulanya, who recently died in Seattle, Washington, where he was receiving medical treatment. She becomes the second female Speaker of Parliament. For reaction to her election and the expectations of her colleagues, I reached parliamentarian Felix Ongwech Adupa in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
It is a norm and tradition that deputy speaker always becomes the speaker of parliament. And to me, she has chaired about 72 sessions for the last 8 months. And all the sessions that she has chaired, there has been no problem. So for the last 8 months, Honorable Anita Among has exhibited the capability that indeed she can manage that house. So we as members of the party, we don't have any problem. We shall support her, and we make sure that 11th Parliament realize the goals, aims and objectives that the late Right Honorable Dr. Jacob Yokorio Lanya was having. So I don't have any wrong perception about the Right Honorable Anita Among.
What are your expectations of her as she officially takes the reins of the Speaker of Parliament of Uganda?
The expectation that we have, first of all, we want to see a parliament that is different from 10th Parliament, from 9th Parliament. We need this 11th Parliament to be run based on rules that are set to run parliament. When the debates are going to be engineered in parliament, it should not be just a debate that is not having any substance. We expect a debate which has got evidence-based and fact debate. We must have parliament that, you know, give a benchmark for our community.
You said after the burial of the former speaker, the NRM will embark on collecting signatures to see that the next president or the president is voted through parliament. Why is this so? Talk to me about why this initiative.
First of all, for the 35 years that we have had under subject election of president, it has been led with violence. It has been not peaceful at all. So many innocent Ugandans died because of this election. Then also after the election, you find that people are not satisfied with it. You end up going to court. After even the court pronounced itself on such election, people are still saying, you know, the court was biased. So, 35 years, People have never been satisfied with this kind of election, especially the members of the opposition. Now, we are trying to say, okay, what is the near solution? If every term in, term out, you are rigged, how you are rigged and rigged, can we also get another method so that you see whether you will be rigged also? It has just been demonstrated yesterday. Honorable Anita Among, people voted out overwhelmingly with 400 and plus votes. And the opposition candidate stood and considered defeat. Okay? So can we have election of the president in Ikololo where members of parliament will conduct it and there will be a total concede of a defeat without any expectation?
That calls for a constitutional amendment. And then number two, people are saying that a lot of Ugandans resisted it and the NRM shelved it. Now you are bringing it back. And people are also saying that this is a clever way for the NRM to ensure that President Museveni remains president for life, because the NRM appears to control a large portion of parliamentarians in parliament, which effectively makes President Museveni president for life. What do you say to these concerns by some opposition groups in Uganda?
This is where the problem comes from. When we are talking a country, people think about Museveni. People always think Museveni is Uganda. Uganda was there before Museveni. And Uganda will keep on being there after Museveni. America was there before Bush. And America is still progressing after Bush. Okay? America was there before Kennedy. And America will keep on moving forward without Kennedy. It is same with Uganda. Okay, life presidency. For instance, when you talk about life presidency of Museveni, does Museveni have any other life remaining? Let's give him 10, 15 years to come. Will you still have Museveni within the political arena of this country? I don't think so. So we are looking at Uganda after Museveni, Uganda without Museveni. It is the aspiration and desire of each and every political party. That's why NRM has got majority in parliament. Then the question comes, bring us to a very serious fundamental question. What are the rest of the opposition doing?
Felix Ongwech Adupa is a member of the Ugandan parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. In Nigeria, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar has declared plans for his presidential bid to compete in next year's general election. Abubakar will lead the main opposition PDP, or People's Democratic Party. The former Vice President was defeated by then-incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari in the last general election. Abubakar was former President Olusegun Obasanjo's vice president for two terms. Critics say he contributed to the country's problems and accused him of corruption, allegations he denies. Paul Ibe is the spokesperson for the former Nigerian vice president. He tells me that Abubakar is the best candidate to address the socioeconomic and security challenges facing Nigeria.
You know, His Excellency Atiku Abubakar informed Nigerians officially of his intent to contest the 2023 presidential election.
What does he bring to the table? Because this will be his sixth time. What will be different this time, if I may ask?
A lot. You know, it will be different. Don't forget the fact that Nigeria is in a peculiar situation as we speak. There is a serious energy crisis, perhaps the worst energy crisis that we've had in a long time. The economy has collapsed. Nigeria has never been so disunited. And people find it difficult to meet the most basic of existential living. Joblessness is rife. Insecurity has attained the worst pandemic level you can ever imagine. I mean, these are serious issues confronting a nation. So, like somebody said the other day, that Nigeria is in an ICU, an intensive care unit. So it needs a surgeon, somebody who can fix the mess. So you need a man who has the experience, who has the capacity, who has the knowledge, who is wired for the times, who is a unifier, something that can bring Nigerians together. Because without unity, you cannot achieve much. Without security, you cannot make any progress. So those are the things that Atiku Abubakar is bringing on the table, and they are consequential.
Some of his critics are saying that he contributed to Nigeria's problems of today when he was vice president under President Olusegun Obasanjo.
His Excellency Atiku Abubakar was not the chief executive, officer, running affairs at that time. He was the vice president, and he had responsibilities that were assigned to him, and all of the responsibilities assigned to him were discharged creditably. I mean, as a chairman of the National Economic Council, he presided over, a nation and an economy that, attained an annual growth of 7%. 7%. And that's huge. I mean, when compared to what we're having now, we've had two recessions under this administration. So he did all of that. He presided over the privatization exercise and tried to, take Nigeria away from, this waste, monumental waste of resources that would have been better plowed into providing social services, education, health. He wanted the private sector to play a critical role, in the economy and provide the expertise that, the private sector is normally associated with. And so you cannot blame him for all of that. Yes, he was part of that administration, but he was not the man that was in charge. But our expectation is that when he will be in charge in 2023, he will bring the enormity of the experiences that he has garnered, both in the public sector and the private sector.
So why do you think former Vice President Atiku Abubakar will be successful this time, especially when he faces a lot of prominent people, including his former vice presidential candidate, Peter Obi, and the former Lagos State Governor, Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu, also known as the Jagaban?
The former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, because of his trajectory, the journey that he has made, what essentially he will be mobilizing Nigerians towards is to be one people. One people with with one future, and then work towards attaining the goal of one country. And basically, having mobilized Nigerians, to see that their interests are intertwined, he will now be in a better position, to energize the country so that we can fix the mess of the last 8 years by 2023. He will ensure that Nigerians become one people, no matter how diverse it is. And he will give opportunities, will bring the enormity of the talents that are bound, to reflect that, the government that he will ensure that Nigerians are one people, and then he will ensure that their future, is one. That though they may be different, and their lives and goals and theirs, may all be different, that they are essentially one, people with one future.
Paul Ibe is the spokesperson for the former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. In Zambia, the main opposition Patriotic Front, or PF, is expressing concern about what it says appears to be a plan to target former government officials with corruption. The party says it does not condone fraud and mismanagement, but says leading members of the group have recently been charged or arrested on allegations of corruption. The remarks come after opposition parliamentarian and former foreign minister Joseph Malanji was arrested Friday. The authorities accuse him of money laundering and owning a hotel and two helicopters purchased with proceeds from criminal activity. Mr. Malanji denies the allegations. For more reaction about the charges against members of the group, I reach the General Secretary of the PF, Nixon Chilangwa.
I also want to be categorical that from the word we have stated that we shall not protect or defend wrongdoing. That has been categorical. But we've also gone a step further. That is, the issue of wrongdoing should not be a witch hunt. The investigation wings, they have the right to ensure that whoever saw, embezzled, was part and parcel of corruption, they need to be accountable for their actions. So for us as a Patriotic Front, we have been very clear, very historical, that we must account for our time while we were in office. And all our people and our members must account for their time while they were in the office. But it should not be a witch hunt whatsoever. So that has been our position.
giving Lubinda, the former justice minister, who is the interim leader of your party, was recently charged of corruption. A lot of corruption accusations have been labeled the officials who served in the PF administration or in the last administration. What do you make of these criticisms? Because a lot of people have been saying that a lot of your officials were corrupt in the previous administration.
The word corruption and the song corruption has been the song that the UPND had been singing before they got into government, during the campaign and after that. And for them, they must justify it. They must go all great lengths to ensure that they justify the song that they were singing. So it doesn't bother us whatsoever. In fact, if you look at the current scenario right now, you discover that all the top four officials in the previous government, they have been charged for one offense or the other. One, you've just mentioned about foreign affairs minister, he's finally been arrested for corruption or money laundering. It has to go to court. He has to prove himself. Honorable Given Luvinda has been charged for corruption, and he says he's happy so that he can finally clear his name once and for all. You go to the former Home Affairs Minister, Honorable Kampiongo. Honorable Kampiongo has been charged with a case of trying to endanger an aeroplane, and it's in court as we speak now. So you can see a systematic approach by the UPND trying to prove that their allegations against the UPND, against the PF, are true. So we are here to watch, and these things are coming to the fore. We hope and trust that they've gotten their acts together and their evidence together so that we can move away from this episode, so that the Zambian people can be given a break. The Patriotic Front can be given a break so that they're able to move forward and we organize ourselves and get ready for 2026.
Are you therefore saying that there appear to be persecution going on?
No, I'm not saying what I'm saying. I am saying that let it be proven in the courts of law. In the courts of law. Did it procure it? Was it given to him by somebody? Was it a borrowed thing? So there are so many questions, but the investigations wings are getting to the bottom of this, and it shall come to pass.
What do you say to those who are saying that corruption was endemic in the previous administration?
That is UPND song. You want UPND to be praising us? You want UPND to say something nice about us? You want UPND to appreciate us? These are characters who, even when they ride on the road that PF made, they will not appreciate it. These are characters you are dealing with. They go and open a milling plant in Southern Province in Monze, five ministers, and they are praising themselves that here, see what we've done. We brought a milling plant to Southern Province and so on. Lo and behold, the plant was set up by PF. These are the characters we are dealing with. What do you expect from them? You expect them to clap for us? No. This is what their agenda has been from the way to go. Their agenda is to ensure that PF does not rise. Their agenda is to ensure that PF is killed. That is their agenda.
Nixon Chilangwa is the General Secretary of the Zambian Main Opposition Patriotic Front, or PF. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, has released its report on the impact of global warming. It indicates that the climate crisis will cause unprecedented damage unless governments take immediate steps to lower emissions. It also states emission cuts remain the best way to solve the problem. This prompted climate activists and civil society groups in Africa to call on the biggest polluters in the world to act quickly to reduce the impact of the climate crisis. To discuss the urgent call for urgent measures to the problem, I reached via Skype the regional director of 350africa.org, Landre Ninteretse.
As part of the release of the IPCC report, 350 and partners across the globe organized a series of protests and mobilization, not only to raise again awareness on the importance of working on climate change, but also to call on government and investors, especially those in the fossil fuel industry, on the necessity and the urgency to stop such type of investment and redirect funding in alternative sources of energy that are clean, sustainable, and safe for the people and the planet. So as part of those mobilization, we had a series of action taking place in countries like Ghana, Kenya, Congo, DRC, Senegal, and South Africa. And this is a continuation of events that that have started early this month and continue through the end of the end of March.
So, Landry, what do you think are the urgent measures that are required to lower emissions as they are indicators of Western climate impact as indicated by the IPCC report?
I think one of the urgent measures that can be put in place at the moment is to ensure that there is no single euro or dollar invested in the fossil fuel industry, but rather any funding available should be directed in alternative sources of energy and other adaptation measures that help communities, especially those in very fragile and vulnerable contexts of Africa. I'm thinking of those in Madagascar, for instance, or East Africa, where they've been facing extremely dramatic cyclones that on the necessity to make sure that such kind of measures are implemented and they are supported in ways of coping with the impact. So I would say stopping new fossil fuel development, investing in renewable energy, and increasing the support needed for vulnerable countries and community to adapt to the crisis.
Well, Landry, you know that the continent of Africa bears the brunt of climate change, despite experts say the continent contributing rather negligibly, or infinitesimally, if you may, what the developed world contribute to adopt climate change and address less loss and damages. What do you think can be done in order to significantly combat the effect of climate change in Africa?
There are a number of action that can be taken. I already mentioned adaptation as an urgent priority one, especially for the communities at the forefront of the crisis. But I have also to add that the adaptation measures are not enough. They cannot be an alternative to emission cuts. Yes, it's good to help those at the moment struggling to cope with the situation. But at the same time, rapid and increase in investment in the renewable energy sector is also a priority. And as we know, again, Africa is not responsible for the crisis. I mean, the majority of the, I would say even the entire continent contribute to less than 5% of the global emissions. So that's a clear sign that Africa cannot be left alone in this fight. It has to be supported, in a significant way, especially from the countries that are historically responsible of the crisis. There is a need to support the right development pathway, which is not based on the fossil fuels, because they are the ones responsible of this crisis. At the same time, technology transfer and other mitigation effort and action plans that can be implemented to help the continent navigate and transition to a less carbon-intensive economies and societies. I think those are the type of help or the support that the majority of African countries need at the moment.
Landry Ninteretse is the regional director of 350Africa.org. He spoke with me from Brussels, Belgium. is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music, from our African collection. But first, Botswana is in the process of amending its anti-human trafficking laws in order to help fight a growing problem. The country has recorded 100 cases in recent months, but only 4 convictions were attained, a development blamed on legislative loopholes. For VOA, Mkodisi Dube reports from the Botswana capital, Habaroni.
Minister of Justice, Defense and Security, Kagiso Musyi, says the country is reviewing its anti-human trafficking laws and will introduce stiffer penalties for offenders. Musyi says the advent of COVID-19 slowed down Botswana's process to align its laws with international protocols.
Implementing the Global Plan of Action Against Trafficking Persons, which Botswana acceded to in September 2017, identifiers will be faced with unfavorable economic, which may in then be catalysts that exacerbate the pervasiveness of transnational organized crime in the form of human trafficking.
Musyi, however, says despite the shortcomings in the legislation, they've recorded successes in solving some cases involving minors.
The complexity ascribed to the investigating cases of human trafficking. It is also commendable that we managed to dispose 2 human trafficking cases in 2021, one of which unfortunately involved the systematic sexual exploitation of a 16-year-old minor. The current anti-human trafficking national action plan is also coming to an end this year, and efforts are underway to review the plan to devise a new plan.
Botswana's Acting Secretary for Safety and Security, Wikutso Butole, says there is need to strengthen the law in order to adequately punish offenders.
As of January 2022, Botswana had 20 cases of human trafficking registered before our courts, and we have attained 4 convictions since the enactment of the Anti-Human Trafficking Act. The slow disposal of cases is mainly attributed to the multifaceted and complex nature of human trafficking case investigations.
Munametsi Sokwe, Executive Director of a coalition of non-governmental organizations, says Botswana is a vulnerable transit route for human trafficking.
South Africa is one of the biggest, it is the biggest transit for human trafficking. So we must look at ourselves as Botswana a very important role in as a transit country also. Not only we have our sea, but some customs, we have head of transit full of human beings at the border.
The amended laws seek stiffer penalties for offenders with jail terms instead of fines as proposed. Under the new law, suspended prison sentences in lieu of fines will also be scrapped. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. At a time when the global community is awash with admonitions that states should respect the principles of the United Nations, particularly those relating to war and peace, and to respect the rule of law, as well as to refrain from any action that may disturb the peace. Decision of the government of Spain last week to recognize Western Sahara as a component state within Morocco presents the African continent with both a challenge and a serious concern. This, the fact that only Algeria has reacted firmly to Spain's decision with less concern expressed by the global community. So once more we see the nature of double standard. In this regard, all Africans should recall how and why the territory of Western Sahara became an issue of international concerns. After much agitation that Spain should decolonize Western Sahara, the government of Spain decided to split the territory into two, gave part of it to Morocco and another part to Mauritania. Subsequently, Mauritania rejected the offer. The issue then was left to the Polisario Front, who were representing the Sahrawi people, with strong support from Algeria, to demand that Morocco get rid of the territory and make it independent. The struggle was very fierce, and it was even seen widely as a struggle between Morocco and Algeria. At the OAU summit in Freetown, Sierra Leone, the Polisario Front won recognition from the Continental Action, and the Polisario Front was seen as the representative of the Sahrawi people, and it was recognized as a member of the OAU. Government of Morocco reacted by leaving the OAU and condemning the action of that organization. Nevertheless, the struggle continued, but under the administration of former Secretary General Pierre de Quer, negotiations were held between Algeria, Morocco, involvement of the Polisario Front. The result of the negotiations was agreement that the disputed territory should be settled by a referendum. The Security Council accepted that decision, passed a resolution, and authorized the Secretary General to proceed to organize a referendum to determine who should occupy all of Western Sahara. The problem was that the representative of the Secretary General in Western Sahara and the peacekeeping force that accompanied him was unable to determine who should participate in this referendum. And that, in the long run, resulted in a deadlock. That dispute was left to follow for long periods, even decades. The last we had of Western Sahara was when former President of the United States, Donald Trump, decided to recognize Morocco as the sovereign head of Western Sahara. Some said in order as an inducement for Morocco to push further its rapprochement with Israel. So that time, not much reaction either. And now, Spain has gone further. And it's important to recognize Spain was the colonial power and now making this decision at this crucial time. But why is the outrage? It must be recalled that Africans have often noted this issue of double standard when matters of Africa and African continent are concerned. At one time, when Africans were promoting comprehensive sanction against apartheid South Africa, they were lectured and lectured that sanctions don't work, that it only prevents agreement. Move forward. Today we are told sanctions are very, very important and help to resolve dispute. Also, there was a high-level panel organized by former and late president of the United Nations, Kofi Annan. And in that high panel were three responsible and respected African representatives. And they felt obliged to discuss in that reform panel the issue of double standard when African issues are at stake. A representative of the Western countries looked at them and said, "Don't be surprised of double standard. It's natural. It will often be applied. Yes, there must be double standard." But this is the dilemma for the African people, and I must say for many in the third world. the usual application of double standards. The lesson for the African countries is that, as we have seen the nature of information warfare in the last 5-6 weeks, Africa is exposed. There is no medium where collectively Africans can present their case to the global community. It is therefore urgent that something be done to organize a study so that Africa will be able to make its voice and position clear to the wider international community. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Yeah. To let me know, Say what I'm feeling inside me, I got to let it show. And you know, when I see apa, I know they see nothing. And you know, when I see apa, I know they see person. I want you to dance.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Mohammed El Shenawi and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if you don't wish to have rags for clothes, don't play with a dog. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.